Hey folks, this is Scott Weingart, and you are listening to an MCRIT podcast. Anyone who's heard me speak knows I hate the BBM. It's a dangerous device. I think it kills people. One of the solutions I've discussed on the podcast is using the ventilator as a better version of the BBM, but most people can't do that. They don't have vents, and it's too complicated, and you can screw it up. So what we're going to talk about today is a better way, a better device than using a ventilator as a replacement for the BVM. Today, we're going to talk about using the oscillator as a replacement for the BVM. And to help me talk about that, I brought on Jim Ducanto. All right, so Jim, why don't we start off with you just telling us who you are and what you do.
Okay, hi, I'm Dr. Jim Ducanto. I'm an anesthesiologist at Aurora St. Lucie, Wisconsin. It's the largest private hospital in the state of Wisconsin. I've been here working here for about 17 years.
I would say you are known to everyone in the foam airway community and our beloved and an incredible contributor to all things airway in the entire social media world.
Oh, that's nice for you to say that. Well, thank you.
Today we're going to talk about the device called the oscillator, which I think you have great affection for. Would that be fair, Jim?
That's fair, yes.
Now, up front, you and I, we have no money we're receiving from the company that manufactures oscillator, but both of us have demo models provided by the company to play around with and do research. Is that correct?
That's correct. I don't have a financial tie to them. They've given me free things, but they don't pay me to say anything about them. Not a spokesman, not a salesman.
All right, let's talk about what the oscillator is. It is a mainly plastic device about the size of your fist. It has an incredibly quick magnetic valve, almost instantaneously responsive valve. It runs on pressurized wall or tank oxygen. And really, if you really boil it down, there's only two controls you really need to touch. There's actually three, but we won't even discuss the third one because you basically never need to touch it at all. So the two controls you could really change are a pressure control knob that sets the maximum pressure the device will ever administer, and then a gold button that lets you choose whether to give manual inhalations or convert the device to an automatic ventilator. So let's talk about this manual resuscitator mode first. So if you switch that knob on the top to whatever maximal pressure you want, and depending on which device, it either goes from 15 to 30 centimeters of water or 25 to 45, depending on which one you buy. So you set whatever maximal pressure you want, and then if you push that gold button, it will deliver 100% FiO2 at 30 liters per minute until one of two things happens. Either you reach the pressure limit that you set on that knob on top, so the maximal pressure limit. So when it gets to that limit, it'll stop automatically, even if you keep holding the button, or you let go of the button. So you can either deliver a breath below that maximal pressure limit, or you could just hold down that button until it reaches that pressure limit, and then it will automatically cycle off. So you're not able to give high pressure breaths with this device. That is a built-in safety limit. That is the manual mode. You're deciding when the breath's gonna happen by pressing that gold button. So it's essentially just like you giving BVM breaths, except instead of having to squeeze the bag and gosh only knows what you're gonna get, you push the button and now you have a controlled flow, a controlled pressure, high FiO2, and you decide when the breaths happen. That is the manual mode. Now, if instead of pressing and releasing that button for each breath, you just continuously held the button or you pushed the button in and gave it a quarter turn, which locks it on its inward press, the device switches to the automatic ventilator mode. And here's where things become really cool, because this now becomes a flow-controlled, pressure-cycled ventilator you could hold in your hand. It's still going to give that fixed 30 liter per minute flow. That's a safe, slow flow. And it's going to keep giving that nice gentle flow until it hits the pressure limit you set on the top of the device. Once it hits that limit, it cycles to passive exhalation until the device reaches between 2 to 4 centimeters a peep, and then it's gonna begin a new breath. Now, on a patient who's not spontaneously breathing, you're actually using it as a ventilator, you could titrate that pressure knob on top until the time of the inhalation is between 1 to 2 seconds. And depending on how long you leave each breath, that'll be between 500 and 1,000 mLs per breath. I usually put it on 1 second per breath, which gives me these nice 500 ml breaths. And so your minute ventilation will be between 10 to 12 liters per minute. Very nice. Basically, it'll give you very slight hyperventilation. And the device lets you know if you're not getting those breaths in, because if it keeps hitting that pressure limit because you have an obstructed airway, it just keeps clicking and lets you know. If on the other hand, breath never cycles off, it just keeps giving you continuous flow, then you know you don't have a mast seal because it's never reaching that pressure limit. So now you have feedback about both bad mast seal and obstructed airway. This is kind of incredible. It solves the five problems of BVM ventilation. The five problems are, we give too many breaths. We have epi flowing through our system. We don't know how many breaths we're actually giving, and we wind up giving 60, 120 breaths a minute. The breaths we do give, they're at too high a pressure that could easily open the esophageal sphincter. And now what makes it even worse is, in addition to giving too many, we give them way too quickly. We squeeze that bag super quick, and therefore we hit maximal inspiratory pressure very quickly and at a level that just pops open the esophageal sphincter. And then we get no feedback about whether the breaths were good or not. And then last but not least, on some of the BVMs, because the exhalation valve is crap, on a spontaneously breathing patient, they're not actually getting any high FiO2. They're getting room air. Basically, the oscillator could solve all five of those problems. Number one, about too many breaths. Well, you can't give too many breaths with the oscillator. It's going to make sure you don't give too many breaths because it's done automatically for you. Those breaths can't be at too high a pressure. The maximal pressure that can be administered is whatever pressure you set on the knob on the oscillator itself. And if you don't set that knob above 30, you can never get a bad breath above 30 centimeters of water. And now, we talked about the breaths being given too rapidly. Jim, how does it prevent that from happening, these super rapid BVM breaths?
The oscillator's purpose in life is to deliver a constant, steady inspiratory flow of only 30 liters a minute. When you hook a bag valve up to one of those ventilator analyzers that actually shows you the flow while you're squeezing the bag, you're going to find out that to squeeze a bag valve at 30 liters a minute inspiratory flow requires you to squeeze that bag so slowly that you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, I'm not ventilating the patient, and everyone around me is going to see that I'm a fool. So obviously, for me to do a great job, I've got to squeeze that bag hard and fast. Otherwise, they're going to think I'm slacking off or I don't know what I'm doing. So the oscillator solves the problem of emergency ventilation, and that is that the flow rates are too high.
If you had a BVM in your hand, and let's say you were deciding to bag that patient, if their airway was not properly positioned, you just keep on pushing that bag, and a lot of that gas would go in the esophagus, and you'd probably get into pressures well over 80 centimeters of water. But when the airway is malpositioned with the oscillator, what happens, Jim?
The oscillator will absolutely completely refuse to work. It will either make a buzzing noise or it'll make a clicking noise. The oscillator requires two things in life to work: a fresh, a pressurized gas supply line from the wall or from a tank of 55 psi, and an open airway. If you don't give it an open airway, it will refuse to function whatsoever. It will not work.
It's the coolest thing. When it starts clicking, now that's your cue. Do something with that jaw and that head, or get an oral airway. It's absolute audio feedback. It's just really delightful.
In addition to that, these devices are used in the military quite a bit. They can't hear a darn thing in the helicopters. They can visually feel it, and they can see the valve stem vibrating up and down. There was actually a military unit that wanted tritium paint placed on the valve stem so they could see it at night. Apparently, they can no longer do that for some reason, but this is the sort of thing that's been done with this device. This device, the reason why no one in medicine as we know it knows about this device is the device was never really created for us at all. It was created for the people who were fishing people out of ditches, going into war zones. It was designed for industrial disasters, mining disasters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, you can use these basically in three ways. You could use them with a mask, either a non-invasive mask or a BVM mask. You could use them with a supraglottic airway or an endotracheal tube. Really, it will work in any of those circumstances, and you use them in all those circumstances, correct, Jim?
That's exactly right. In addition to that, which is really interesting, is I discovered by using a nasal CPAP mask from a CPAP system, I could use it in the nose, and then I discovered is all I had to do was use a pediatric face mask over the nose, and I could do the same thing with mask straps. So I can give a 30 liter per minute nasal cannula with this thing if I just strap it on to the patient.
And we're going to talk about that exact topic when we get to the procedural sedation part. So that's fantastic. Let's talk about your use of it in pre-oxygenation. Tell us your setup and how you actually make this work.
Okay, well, what I'll do Everyone who hears my lecture, you know, our discussion here, needs to understand that the bulk of my cases are elective surgical cases. So these patients are my customers, and I have to really be very gentle and very careful with them. So what I'll do is, after the monitors are applied, a sedative is administered, I'll apply the oxalator to the patient. In the patient in which I'm looking at a predicted difficult airway, I'm looking at a variety of situations in which I'm expecting trouble, I'll explain to the patient that I'm going to start to give them some oxygen under pressure. It works a lot like a CPAP. And many people now understand what that means because they use CPAP while they sleep. I say, on the count of three, I'm going to administer the pressure to you. I want you to relax and let it breathe into you. And you exhale when you feel like you need to exhale. So then I go one, two, three, click, I turn the thing on. And you can see in many of the movies that I have released to the foam community, this little ritual that I do, that I warn the patient. I try to talk them through it because I realize that I could cause a panic attack in the patient, or basically have the patient completely balk at me and not cooperate at all if I don't introduce it to them properly. So this is my scenario. So now that the oxalator is now in automatic mode, what happens is that initially there's an airway obstruction as the patient begins to adjust to it. They start to relax, the oxalator starts to build pressure in the airway, and then you see the first big exhale. And as you see the exhale, you can see almost a little bit of a look of relief on their face if they're awake enough to exhibit that look of relief, because it's a little bit weird to have your airway pressurized through a mask at first. But they start to relax and they almost instantly accept it. So what I then do is I have something called a gas analyzer, because I'm an anesthesiologist, and I can look at the end tidal oxygen concentration that they are exhaling. That tells me when I've washed all of the nitrogen out of them. I wait until I wash the nitrogen out, that I get to an end tidal oxygen of at least 88%. And then I can push my induction meds pretty safely. Following loss of consciousness, often what I can do is I can face mask ventilate simply with a jaw thrust and a small head tilt without an oral airway. In most patients, there are those that you can't ventilate them at all unless you use an oral airway, and that's fine. That's no big deal. You take the mask off, you put the oral airway in, you go back at it. So that's sort of my initial explanation of it, Scott.
Now, Jim, when you're doing this pre-oxygenation, I know you do what I have adopted as well, which is I have operating room mask straps.
Yes.
And that is right there is a tip for no matter what you do in emergency medicine. You could take the BVM mask, separate the BVM from it, put the mask straps on and some extension tubing, and the device becomes much more ergonomic.
Yes.
Now, Jim, we're going to put some of your videos that are already freely available up with this. So when people have no idea what I'm talking about when I talk about mask straps or extension tubing, they'll be able to look at the videos.
Okay, great.
And also, both of us use commercial, I use a heat moisture exchanger / filter, or you could just use a filter. But the point is we use external filters that are designed to screen out tuberculosis for ventilators. And as such, you do not need to sterilize the oxalator between cases unless a patient actually pukes on top of it, correct?
Right. Even if they cough, they can't get through the filter. So we're using essentially what Scott was referring to is referred to as a HEPA filter, H-E-P-A. I forgot what that stands for, high efficiency, something particulate.
Yep.
I forgot. But anyway, so if you use a HEPA filter between the oxalator and the patient, the only cleanup between patients is one of those baby wipes that's impregnated with bleach or whatever. I personally like the Cava wipes. They smell nice and they are good to destroy germs. So you just wipe the thing off. I mean, that's an absolutely incredible turnaround, is you wipe it off and you put it in your bag and you walk away. It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just what we do with ventilators too. So this is all standard mm-hmm. medical practice. We're not doing
right.
anything shifty here. Now let's say you did this for the pre-oxygenation. The patient nodded off to sleep from your propofol and whatever muscle relaxant you decided to give. And you're a medical student that's on your rotation, because Jim is medical clerkship director as well, right, Jim?
Right.
All right. So your medical student gets the tube in on the first try. You don't immediately have to hook them up to the anesthesia circuit. You could put them right back on the oxalator, correct?
Correct. That's exactly right.
And now that it's essentially going to act as a wonderful transport ventilator.
That's right.
It's going to give them a very nice tidal volume. It's going to give them 100% FiO2. And You could dial in the actual tidal volume by how long the cycle is for each breath, right, Jim?
That's right. So what Scott's describing is the manner in which you set the tidal volume is to simply listen with your ear how long the inspiratory breath goes in over. The device delivers gas at 30 liters a minute, which translates into 500 milliliters per second. For a 1 second inspiratory time, you're getting a 500 milliliter tidal volume breath. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. It couldn't be easier. And you just adjust that by adjusting the actual pressure dial. And that's going to determine how much pressure it goes up to and therefore how long the cycle is. So really, this is the simplest transport ventilator you could ever imagine.
That's right.
And now, Jim, you and I have a device which I still think is not yet available in the U.S., which really just changed the entire complexion of the device for me, which is there is a PEEP valve adapter. Is that available yet, Jim?
No, it's not.
What's stopping that from happening? Because that just makes this amazing.
I know. You know, I think it's a regulatory issue. And I think that because this device is classified as a resuscitator, if you start to modify it, you might take it out of its class. That's one thing. And then I think there's also quite a bit of testing that has to go on through all the FDA.
Well, fair enough. Hopefully that will be coming down the pike because that just really changes the complexion of the device for patients with physiologic shunt and other issues that need some PEEP to open up their FRC. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, Jim, is the use of non-invasive, in this case through the oscillator, for procedural sedation, things like Bronx, TEEs, any procedure where the patient's still spontaneously breathing, and we've been told it's anathema to use non-invasive. Now, you found a way to make it safer because that fear of having a full face mask and you had that, you know, 1 in 1,000 patient who vomited, well, that doesn't seem like a good situation, even if you recognize it right away because you got to get the straps off and blah, blah, blah. But right. You using just a nasal CPAP mask or the pediatric BVM mask with some straps, it means if you turn away for a second and that patient did have some passive regurgitation, it's not going to be blown into their mouth from the full face mask.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point. That is a very good point. So the oscillator, if you use use a face mask that's small enough to fit over the nose, let's just say that, with continuous flow, of course you'll have plenty of oxygen, yes, number one, but you will have an increased amount of pressure at the base of tongue to hold that airway open during your procedure. If they have an airway obstruction, tongue falls to the posterior pharyngeal wall. You may have an airway obstruction. The oscillator may either obstruct or it may continue to flow and the gas may come out of the mouth of the patient, of all things, believe it or not.
Absolutely. And so the way I have used this after watching your videos is when I have a patient with obstructive sleep apnea, say, who we know they're going to desaturate if we just leave them on standard zero PEEP. No matter how much oxygen you put them on, because they're going to obstruct, I'll put them on that nasal BVM mask with some straps. I'll have one of my folks monitoring the airway and holding the mouth closed with a head tilt chin lift. And now it's all going to go in through the nose. They're going to pressurize the airway. They're going to have their non-invasive. And I know immediately if that person up top has slacked off and let the head kind of fall onto the sternum, because now the oscillator starts clicking and lets me know they no longer have a patent airway.
Very good. Yeah. So what's important here that Scott just said is that they're maintaining the mouth closed. If you maintain the mouth closed, the oscillator will work as if it's working with a full face mask, essentially. It will, if you can seal up the mouth, it will hold that base of tongue away from the back of the posterior pharyngeal wall with pressure.
Very, very cool. Jim, what other uses have you made of the oscillator? I know you've used it during CPR as well. Now, I'm a little tentative about using this long-term once they get to the hospital, but to use this in the pre-hospital setting, it just makes so much more sense than a BVM, where you will not be able to properly time continuous ventilations until they have an endotracheal tube. But with the oscillator, with a supraglottic airway or a mask, you'll be able to do continuous compression CPR.
Correct. With a mask, you can, because of how fast this will work with CPR with a mask or a supraglottic airway or a tracheal tube. So the oscillator really doesn't care what you hook it up to. All it wants is an open airway, and it's just going to do its job.
All right, Jim, anything else you want to add?
There is a very large study going on in Europe right now that pairs the oscillator up with the Lucas 2 device. Until they publish their data, we can't talk about it. The results are favorable.
I mean, my dream, Jim, is that paramedics place the patient on a mechanical CPR device immediately upon arrival. They put in a supraglottic airway immediately upon arrival. They hook it up to an oscillator, and they get the hell out of there. I mean, that would be ideal from so many perspectives.
Precisely.
All right. I can't thank you enough, Jim.
You bet.
And I'll talk to you soon, my friend.